Hari Ho Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 72. One other philosophy to be avoided is that of the Mayavadis. The scriptures are not genuine, but are distortions of the meaning of the Vedas. Actually, they are covered Buddhism and are meant to mislead the foolish people in the Kali Yuga. On the order of the Lord, Shiva appeared in a Brahmana family and became an Acharya. Then, like Jaimini, while taking authority from the Vedas, twisted the meaning to delude the world. He took the Buddhist doctrine of illusion and tried to delude the world. By doing this, he covered the direct meaning of the Vedas and the process of bhakti. Thus, if one accepts any of these philosophies, there is no place for real bhakti. One takes the holy name along with these philosophies, one is committing serious offense to the name. One simply brings about one's own end. The jiva can accept the direct meaning of the Vedas, which is the path of pure bhakti. He will be rewarded with the sweetness of prema. But if he takes indirect meaning or metaphorical interpretations as the real meaning, he cannot come to truth and dies of his offense to Krishna. The principal sound in the Vedas is Om, which is the name of Krishna, and by chanting the name, one can achieve the goal of life. If by misfortune or accident happens that one commits Shruti Ninda, one should be repentant and offer his respects to the scriptures. With attention, one should offer flowers and tulsi leaves to the Bhagavatam and the Vedas. Being the essence of the Vedas and an incarnation of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam will give unlimited mercy. So you see, here's this offense to the scriptures is you have the element, of course, of saying that one doesn't have faith in them or there's a problem in them and this and that, which is pretty obvious. But it also is giving the ideas that one's accepting a philosophy that's not actually being given in the Bhagavatam. Then that also is Shastra Ninda. Right? Back. So it must be full of eggplant and mustard oil.
Of you, baby.
Does this make sense? So, Jai Ho, Sadhu. So, the idea that one can just come up with one's own idea of the philosophy is improper. Shastra gives conclusions. Shastra gives directions. That's what must be followed, as it's given in the line of the Acharyas. So one can't make something up. One can't put things together the way one likes. If one does that, that'll be offense to the scripture, because the scripture is giving the actual conclusion, the actual truth, right? So one has to be very, very careful about this. So this means the books themselves, the teachings of the Acharyas, these things you can't play with. Right? Because the scriptures, it's saying here, is that the scriptures are all pointing to chanting of the holy name is the most important. In Manu it says the most important duty of a Brahmin is chanting japa. Right? And if he simply chants the holy name, then he's perfecting all duties, right? And even if something is, some offense is committed, then simply by chanting, studying the scriptures and chanting, he will be relieved from all reaction. That's mana, right? This is the book that we think, oh, this is so strict and so rough, you know, fingers get cut off and this and that. But yes, that's for some, that's just for the common ordinary person that these recommendations are made. Because otherwise they won't take it seriously, right? In other words, it's like this. What do you say for a person who, okay, the devotee did this nonsense. Okay, now what to do? He needs to be purified. Okay, so Shastra recommends he chants the holy name and study scriptures. Okay, is that going to fly in the community? No. They want to see some kind of retribution, right? Drawn and quartered, tarred and feathered. You know, something has to be done. So Manu, for such low mentality, then gives what kind of social things could be done that would purify the person so he doesn't get any reaction, and all the mundaners would feel satisfied. So that's what he's dealing with. But when it comes to brahmanas and devotees, it's a whole different story. Right? So that's why, yes.
And it's the same mundaners that go crazy over the instructions in Manu.
Yeah. No, it's sad. They'll, we can't do this, we can't do that. That's not for this age. But at the same time, as they want retribution. So what are you supposed to do? So that's why he's saying one should avoid all these other philosophies. Because all these other philosophies will distract one from the pure chanting of the holy name. Right? Five. Yes.
Also, half freaks will fall into this fourth category?
Half freaks. What's a half freak?
Health freak.
Well, not so much. It's that they're getting more distracted. I would say is that they're not... See, because sadhu ninda means you're taking from shastra ninda, shruti ninda here, you're taking from the scripture and misinterpreting it, misapplying it. So if you're basing it on scripture and then coming up with some kind of health regime that's not really supported by the Vedas or is its purpose is not to be Krishna conscious, then you could say that that's starting to go in that direction. But generally speaking, all it is an overemphasis in their life on the mechanical need of nutrients. You know what I'm saying? It's not actually a healthy approach, because something has its balance. It only has that much it requires. Right? Food requires a certain amount of time in your life. So that means preparing for it, eating it, you know, cleaning, you know, arranging those things, and that's it. So when the rest of one's life goes into that, unless it's an occupation, right? If someone's a nutritionist, then he may think about food and nutrition all day. But that's his occupation, but in his own personal life, that's not the position. But if in the personal life that's taking up all that space, then one is going to be distracted. You know what I'm saying? So instead of the holy name being the most important, and in this case, instead of taking prasad, it'll always be this and that. Like very common, you sit down to take prasad and they serve and you go, oh, that's so rich. Oh, that's so, that you can't eat. And the point is health comes from assimilation. Right, if you assimilate the food, you become healthy. But if people are talking all these things when you're eating, you can't assimilate. That's why I've made the point, and I stick to it, I have not met a healthy food freak. A health food freak, I've never met a healthy one. Not one, never. Like that. I mean, someone can challenge us if they want and point one out to me, but I have never met one. Because the basic principle of the Ayurveda says is that the point is you have to appreciate what you eat. But a health food freak never appreciates what they eat unless it tastes terrible. You know, you're eating, you know, a spirulina, brewer's yeast, and some other thing mixed like that. Then they'll go, ooh, this is so nice. It tastes disgusting. But they're not talking about the taste. They're talking about the health benefit. But the point is that combination would be really good if you were a 2,000-kilo bull. You know, they'd be able to get the benefit out of it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, is that, you know, I'm sure if you check, there's a lot of minerals in here, very good minerals, you know, but I can't get it, you know. But there are bugs that eat rocks, right? That's what their food is, rocks. So the point is if you're basing it on scripture and twisting that and coming up to a conclusion other than pure devotion, then that would be Shastra Ninda. But if you're just distracted by these other things, that's just mixed devotional service. Is that okay? Yes.
So you said here that Lord Shiva, you know, he came in this Kali Yuga and he speak to people.
Yes.
Is it coming, it is the same thing for every Kali Yuga?
Oh, is it every Kali Yuga that he comes? Yes, every Kali Yuga you get this. Because every Kali Yuga you have to have Buddha come. Because in the Kali Yuga when it starts, so you have someone who has advanced intelligence, advanced techniques. So with advanced facility comes advanced responsibility. So when people take that advanced facility and misuse it for their own personal sense gratification, then it becomes a real disturbance, right? So then Buddha always has to come to lead the followers of the Vedas away from the Vedas because they're misapplying, misusing. And then having been led away where now they're not worried about, it's been enough time that they're not going to misapply the Vedas, then the Lord sends Shankaracharya to bring them back to the authority of the Vedas, then comes the other Acharyas who then reestablish Vaishnavism. Right? So it's a standard Kali Yuga program. You know, in other words, we have to get used to the idea that Kali Yuga happens 1,000 times in one day of Brahma. And the same things happen over and over again. So this idea that I'm unique is not so unique. Everybody thinks they're unique, but no one is. Because it's the modes of nature that make everything function. So the modes of nature then have their different combinations that will be seen unique or not unique at any one time. You know what I'm saying? So if the point is being unique, then, you know, you could do anything and be unique. Just like, you know, you go to some... how you say, avant-garde party, right? And everybody there is in some wild kind of dress and makeup and different things like that. If you came in a three-piece suit or a tuxedo with a, then you'd be weird. You'd be unique, right? But people would be afraid to do that. So they're trying to be unique within their very specific genre. You understand? So that's what's going on, is that people have, the modes of nature dictate and they're following. So every Kali Yuga it's the same. The same stuff goes on. And every Kali Yuga then Lord Shiva will come as Shankara, Buddha will come. That's why the term chewing the chewed is used, because it really means chewing the chewed. Right? You know, it means, is that like that? Five, interpreting the holy name. The Smritis or Puranas glorify the holy name of Krishna, stating that if one should chant the name, either in negligence or in faith, Krishna will show that person great mercy. Mir is no knowledge as pure as the name. There is no vow as powerful as the name. I was probably supposed to be there. There is no meditation more effective than the name, nor is there any fruit greater than that attained by the name. There is no greater renunciation than the name. There is no greater peace than the name. In this world, there is no greater pious activity than taking the name, nor is there any quicker process than in the name. The name is the highest liberation, the highest freedom, the highest destination, the highest peace, the point of no more searching. The name is the highest devotion. The name is the purest incarnation of the jiva. The name is the highest love and direct remembrance of the Lord. The name is the cause of all causes, the Supreme Lord, most worshipable, and is the is a form of guru to bring one to the Lord. It is stated that 1,000 names of Vishnu are equal to one name of Ram, and three names of Ram are equal to one name of Krishna. The Vedas say that the holy name is purely spiritual, and thus they constantly glorify the name. One who minimizes the effects of chanting the holy name, as stated in the Vedas and Puranas, is an extreme offender. The rascal who commits artavad against the name is doomed to rot away in hell. Some people say that the results of the holy name that are stated in the scriptures are not true, but only meant to attract one to the name. But those persons, due to a lack of bhakti sukriti, lacking faith, cannot understand the real purport of the scriptures or the greatest welfare of mankind. Instead, they will take the opposite interpretation. Because the karmakanda section of the Vedas is meant to satisfy one's selfish desire for material gain, for motivation's sake, many tempting results are offered. However, in the process of pure bhakti, the candidate practices unselfishness, for the goal of bhakti is unmotivated service to Krishna. Therefore, although the statements concerning the holy name are not exaggeration meant to motivate, but are the true effects of the name, the devotee does not take the name for his own material enjoyment. He does not ask for the fruits mentioned in the scriptures. So, because the Karmakanda gets into very elaborate elements and explains so many nice fruits you'll get, and so on the Karmakanda platform, then that works quite nicely. People are inspired, they get involved. But someone who's on the platform of Jnanakanda understands that those points that the scriptures are making are true, but by not explaining the full picture, that our idea that we're getting from it is exaggerated. Right? Like, the heavenly planets are known as Amara, or deathless, because nobody dies on the heavenly planet. When you're going to die, you're removed from the heavenly planet and die out in space. You know what I'm saying? It'd be just like a hospital. We can say, in this hospital, no one's ever died in this hospital. So people will think, wow, great, I'm going to admit my relatives and friends to this hospital. What it means is that when they notice they're going to die, then they roll the gurney outside into the back parking lot and they die out there. Like that. That's what's actually going on. So the idea is that even though the scripture is not saying anything incorrect, the connotation that one can get from it is exaggerated. Right? Like that. And, yes. And just as, let us say, you're in a really good situation, everything's going right at that moment, you just feel that it's going on forever. Right? So in scripture, refers to that aspect. That it's eternal or like that. That's because you feel that eternalness. Right? But 2 seconds later, then, the lights go on or, the movie stops or, the guy behind you honks the horn. Something wakes you up and brings you back to reality. Does that make sense? So it's not that the points have their element that you feel that, but they're not substantial. But when it was talking about the holy name, it means all that. So the scriptures, because the living entity is looking for something within the material realm, and what they're looking for is simply the interaction of the senses and sense objects. That's mechanical. So therefore, then some mechanical element is always going to be what's inspiring. Right? So we look into the Veda for what are the mechanics, right? Just like if you say, okay, we're going to have a seminar on, husband and wife dealings, right? So it'll be popular, but what is it going to be looked for? What are we going to look for when we go to that seminar, right? at least the men, what are they going to look for? What's the trick? Right? What's that little mechanical trick that makes it all work? Right? Because that's the thing. No, but it's not that. It's an attitude. Right? So we're so used to, I am God, so therefore I'm masculine, so therefore I'm the controller. By controlling, I manipulate the energy. It transforms. I get my result that I enjoy. Right? So the whole emphasis is on the mechanics. Right? At least the gross mechanics. So then the difficulty comes is when the scriptures are giving all that, because that's what the living entity is going to have faith in and be inspired in. But when it goes that actually all this is not necessary, you just have to chant the holy name and everything that you're looking for and all this very difficult mechanics of renunciation, you simply get by chanting. You know, all that peace you're looking for in the impersonal Brahman, or by creating, humanistic interaction between all the peoples of the world, is just done by the holy name. You know, all these things, it's just, the holy name does whatever you're looking for. Right? Whatever knowledge is there, it's in the holy name. Whatever satisfaction is there, it's in the holy name. Whatever is the goal of anything that you're doing, it's the holy name. So having that faith, then one simply chants the holy name. So only when there's a need of getting a mechanical result for use in the Lord's service is the external sciences and arts then practiced. Does that make sense? Like we want to cook something nice. The whole Krishna is non-different from his name. We're trying to please him as a person. So we cook things for Krishna. So the science of cooking is used. But the point is it simply Krishna's satisfaction? Right? So this being able to balance that where mechanics are useful and where they're not, then that's the point. Because in all these other ones, Shankya, as a philosophy, it's mechanical. Right? Karma Mimamsa is mechanical. Yoga is mechanical. Nyaya, Vaisheshika. It's all mechanics. Right? So it's catering to the karma and gyan conditioning of the living entity. Right? It's not dealing with something else. Right? Bhakti is beyond that, so we're not used to that. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Dharma, how many follow? Artha, that everyone follows. That's mechanics. Sense gratification is mechanics. Right? Dharma is mechanics, but that's on a different level. Right? You're talking about universal mechanics there. Just by Nama Bas, one can get all the results attained by the processes of karma and gyan. Like just by chanting, you know, devotees are looking for money, they're looking for facilities, they're looking for good management. All you have to do is chant. And they'll say, no, you have to know the skill. It says, I know God brothers and known the skill for the last 25 years. I don't see any results. So wouldn't it be better to stick to chanting the holy name? You know what I'm saying? By the name's grace and it happens? That's the whole point. Then what do we mean by, what is it? Mukam karoti vachalam pangolam gayate girim. What do we mean? The lame man can cross over the mountain. The blind man can see stars in the sky. It's by Krishna's grace. He's pleased. It all works. But we're thinking, no, by my endeavors, I get the result. So I am the doer. Therefore, I have to know these mechanics. But it's not true. If you have faith in the holy name, and then you add them as a support to make things work nicely, great. But if you actually sincerely think that it's the mechanics that are going to get you results in Krishna consciousness, you've missed the whole point. Right? Does that make sense? Completely missed. Here, Nama Bas. You say, okay, well, that's advanced chanting. But no, Nama Bas. We're talking about not advanced chanting. That's the glory of the holy name. Whatever you want on the material or spiritual platform, Nama Bas will give you. Right? So that's no big deal. So whatever the karmis and jnanis are looking for, which is what we were looking for before coming to devotional service, which is what our conditioned nature is in line with, it's all there in the holy name. So that's simply one has to chant the holy name. That doesn't mean you just sit in the room and chant and don't make any endeavor. You make your endeavor. But the point is if the chanting's not there, what's the use? Had one god brother, it was a Janmashtami program was coming up. He was the temple president, so he'd go out early morning, come back late at night, collecting for the festival. So after so many days of this, then Prabhupada, who happened to be there, then he called him over and asked him, you know, what about chanting? He says, no, Prabhupada, I'm so busy, you know, collecting for this festival and all that, and the pressure is so... And Prabhupada's point was, is what's the use of the festival if you're not chanting? Right? The whole point of the festival is to get people to chant. If you're not chanting, what's the meaning? Right? So one has to balance it. Does that make sense? It's not that there's not endeavor in these areas, but it's an endeavor in this area because that's what you can do anyway. Or that's what you can easily learn to do. But the holy name is always the prominent. There is no other process. Nothing else will make... There is no other element that will make a spiritual movement or the material world run perfectly. Because the Vedas, as we said, Manu, which is the textbook for human society, says that chanting of the holy name is the most important duty of a brahmana. Right? So now if you want to identify, well, we're Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, so we have less important work to do, then great, you can do that. But remember, Brahmins are the lead of society, so therefore then taking that lower position, one should not try to control or direct society in general. You understand?
This wish fulfilling potency is a unique characteristic of the name, or it is also imbibed in other processes of bhakti?
Wish fulfilling principle. The point is it's the name is Krishna, so it's Krishna it's his mercy and kindness. You know, you're doing something nicely. Just like the bird was, you know, very hard working trying to remove all the water from the ocean. Right? So then Garuda is very kind. So when that endeavor is sincere, then Krishna is kind. Right? That's why there's 9 processes of devotion through which you can get the Lord's mercy. But the hearing and chanting is considered the principle of the 9. Because if that's in place, the others will go nicely. If such results can be obtained by Nama Bas, is there need to doubt the great benefit one will get by chanting the pure name? All the glories of the name that are recited in the scriptures are accepted as fact by the sincere bhakta. The low-class men do not accept this, however, and by their doubting commit offense, which leads them to certain ruin. From the beginning to the end of the Vedas, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and the Puranas, the name is glorified. To minimize and interpret these glories, which are clearly stated by the authority of the Vedas, will yield no good result. So here it's also, because in this one, then I think inattentive chanting will be one of the 10. So then the interpretation and the accepting, thinking that the glorification is... the chanting of the name's overrated, you know, if that's your thing. So those two are connected as one here. So also that one doesn't give an interpretation, one doesn't come up with one's own idea of, you know, how it works or what it's supposed to do or anything. The Lord and the Lord's name are one, for the Lord has invested in the name all his transcendental energies. Thus he has made chanting the holy name the supreme process. As the Lord is completely independent and full of all energies, he has, by his will, invested in karmakanda activities, his material energy, and in brahma-gyan, in his nirvana energy. But in the holy name, he has invested all energies with all results. Why argue about why and how? The Lord can do what he wants. Therefore, the intelligent, learned man will not yield to interpreting the glorious name. We also have the element that by making the chanting process the supreme process, that means the devotional process is available to anyone at any time. Because all these other processes then that one has for elevation require certain facility or certain qualifications. Right? You have to have a certain amount of wealth, like to do a soma yajna. You have to have 3 years' stock of food. If you don't have 3 years' stock, then the Shastra says, don't even bother. Right? You know, and we're amazed that the Mormons keep 2 years' stock of food. Right? But here's 3 years' stock, otherwise don't even bother doing the yajna. Because in doing that yajna, you're going to use all that up. You know? So it's like, so, it makes it easy. These big yajnas, the meditation, the big opulent deity worship, all these then are, if one has the facilities, are very, very useful. But the chanting, one, anyone at any time, anywhere can do. So it's the universal process. Therefore, it's the supreme process of all processes. Right, so he's put his podzis in the Karmakanda section, that'll give you material results. Jnanakanda, that'll give you its results. But in the holy name, you get the results of everything are in it. Right, the others are specific for their area. Yes?
What is this nirvana yajna?
Nirvana means this idea of liberation. If one happens to commit artavad, he should humbly go before an assembly of Vaishnavas who engage in discussions about Krishna and reveal his offense at their feet, begging sincerely for forgiveness. The devotees of the Lord, conversant with all the glories of the holy name, will mercifully forgive him and embrace him. The offense of interpreting or concocting will not occur again. If one happens to talk with one of these offenders, one should immediately, without taking off one's clothes, bathe in the Ganges for purification. If any pure water is not available, one should mentally purify oneself. So, in other words, he's giving here the interpretation of the name means that you don't think it has the potency that the Shastra says. You think, in the interpretation is that you think the glories are exaggerated. So if somebody says like that, well, he could just chant, oh, that won't work, you know, then just like that. It's said that one should then at that point, immediately, without taking one's clothes off, take bath in the Ganges, like that. Yes. What if you're in Warsaw?
Sometimes you might get to hear, like, I was wondering, there is like this offensive mentality may be mixed in one's sincere concern about neglecting one's material duties.
One's material duties means?
I mean, like, the duties from the bodily maintenance section.
The bodily maintenance section. Okay. Well, what does that mean? I mean, how is that interpreted? You stop eating and sleeping and breathing and drinking water because you're chanting the holy name.
Take this extreme example, and one will just say that, okay, you just chant holy name, and the other person will say, no, you can't just chant holy name, you have to...
No, the point is why can't you just chant the holy name? What's wrong? Hari Das Thakur just chanted the holy name.
It's boring.
Huh? It's boring, okay. And so if it's boring means you'll want to do something else. Therefore, there's other processes. There's eight other, you know, there's other processes to keep the mind busy. right? And since we think we're the body, then it needs to be taken care of. And even if it's not a matter for ourselves, if we're not on the bodily platform in actuality, then we can appreciate that other people are. So if you don't look in good shape, then they won't want to follow your process. You know, it's like, you know, the local housewife from around the corner who happened to just drop in to see who the Haris are, if they see that they don't take care of themselves, she's not going to be interested. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's being taken care of there. That's the point, is we take this to extreme. Only the holy name, nothing else. No, it means as a process of elevation, it's the only one required. So when it comes to Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, these things the holy name will take care of. Right? But you have your duties in what you do in connection with your service, with the body, you know, other duties in the community. Those continue. But they're not understood as primary. Right? They're secondary or tertiary or anything like that. Does that make sense?
And I would say a step subtler. That somebody has a problem of nature, like psychological problem or some psychiatric problem. So the same opinions will be, the chanting will be enough to get him together. Or no, he has to go to the...
It's just a matter of, if you have a cold, would you say just chanting's enough? The point is you have a cold. What is it doing? You know what I'm saying?
Preventing us from chanting.
It's preventing you from chanting, but what is it affecting? The soul? The consciousness?
Body.
The body. So therefore the body has a problem, you have something that takes care of that. So if there's psychological problems, then if someone can help with that, then that's nice. But you have to make sure that the person who's the psychologist isn't one of the ones from the previous page about who has their own philosophy about how, you know, perfectly situated after psychological treatment is that you're comfortable with yourself, so now you're ready to go out into the world and enjoy. Because that's what psychology does. You know, whatever you feel like you can do like that, you just have to balance it within everything. And, you know, so it's really nice that you can talk, they can listen, they know how to ask questions. They're very expert. One of the main things you learn is how to ask a question that you'll talk. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's, most people don't do that because they don't want to listen. But psychologists are paid to listen, you know, like that. You know, if you were paid $300 an hour to just sit there and listen, you'd probably do it. You know, and you'd probably be very good at getting them to talk, because the more they talk, the more you get paid. So, you know, so in that way, then the people are very comfortable that they're able to express themselves. But once they've expressed themselves and what they do with it, you know, what's their definition of normal? That's what, you know, basically goes back to, you know, Charvak and Mayavad and, you know, these other philosophies. So, you know, you have to see. If it's clinical, where they can't function, then you have to have, it has to be taken care of. If it's eccentric, which much of the world is anyway, then by chanting the holy name, that should take care of it. But the point is in their eccentricity, they're breaking some etiquette somewhere, or they're applying things in their life in a balanced way, right? Insanity means you're not balanced, right? So actual sanity is, you see yourself as servant of Krishna, you're always in all situations engaged in service to Krishna. That's sane. Anything else is insane. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of what insanity is accepted as normal, so then that becomes a particular cultural phenomenon. You know what I'm saying? It's just like every country, you know, of the world, if you ask them about the mentality of the countries next to them, they'll always say they're crazy, because their balance of things is always in their mind wrong. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so you know, it's like if you go south, they're too intellectual. You go west, they work too hard and don't, you know, sit back and enjoy life. You know, they have the facility, but they never enjoy it. Like that. And you go to the west, they'll talk to the east, they're too lazy, they don't do enough. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? If you go over there, you know, to the west of them, then, you know, they're too artistic and this and that. Why can't they just get down to work? And then they'll think that the east is, says, you know, what's the point? You know, what about refinement? What about the human quality? You know, into the west of that, then the fish thing, you know, when they fall in here, then they'll be worthwhile. But when they're on land, not much use to us. You know, so like that, it just goes every place, everybody else, because the balance is different. So the only actual sane person is the devotee. Like that. So in other words, those kind of insane anomalies, then those the chanting will take care of, along with the, you know, understanding the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness. But if it's clinical, then the chanting will do the job. But the difficulty is that how long it will take and how much they'll disturb others. So if you have an environment which they can be in so they don't bother others, you know, in their moments of insanity, then there's nothing better than the chanting to take care of it. In fact, if they can't, it's said in the insane asylums, Prabhupada mentioned, they can't chant the holy name, they can chant Om, because any insane person can do that, right? So that will bring them back to sanity. So even that will do the job, but it's just a matter of, you know what I'm saying? It's just like anyone would benefit from living in the temple and doing full-time service, but only someone who, that balance between attraction and retraction is such that they could live in the temple would function there. Otherwise, it will bring out the retractions too much. They'll become hard-hearted, or they'll become more overly attracted to their material desires. So therefore, you want to find that balanced situation. Does that make sense? So the point is how to create what is the benefit of temple life in whatever situation they're in. Does that make sense? Like that. So that exposure to the holy name, to worship of the deities, to the association of devotees, to hearing of scriptures, that's what you're trying to affect. Does that make sense? So the name will do everything. You know, like that. You know, if there's some... Does that make sense? But, you know, if it's a matter of there's some chemical imbalance or this and that, like I have one god brother, his body doesn't produce a particular enzyme. So simply he takes that as a pill and he's fine. But if he doesn't take it, he'll go nuts. You know, it's just so, you know, it's easy. Yes?
Just take an example regarding this topic. One devotee was living in the temple for many years, and he's not any more balanced with the social pressure in the temple. But he's following the instruction of the spiritual master, engaging in the preaching mission. But the authorities tell him, now you take white dhoti, and you live outside of the temple.
But white dhoti, colored sari.
Colored. White, instead of keeping saffron color.
No, it means it's saffron color white sari, or it's white dhoti colored sari.
In the temple he was wearing a saffron dhoti.
Okay.
But now he has to move out from the temple. And they tell him, now you're moving out from the temple, now you have to, you're still brahmachari, but you have to wear white.
Well, the thing is the question, the point, because you don't know the detail here, is that is he able to function in the environment of the temple with the other devotees in that? Because the temple is a specific environment. It's not just like a go-down where everything just gets put, you know? So one has to be able to function in the environment there. So in that case, if it's not, then he, you know, you shift into an environment where they will be able to function. You know, where, in other words, if, like you have, let's say you have the brahmachari that he absolutely, the concept that others exist just doesn't mean anything to him. So when he gets up in the middle of the night, he turns on the light and starts rustling through all his bags because there was something he can't remember is there. None of the other brahmacharis can sleep. You know, when it comes to food, he has to have only this and he can't have that. And even though there's only a little bit of that because he can only eat that, he feels he can only eat that, so he should get it all. No one else should get. These kind of things, he's not actually fit to be in the environment of those. But if he's a little bit out from that, where he has that facility, he has his own room, he can make some of these arrangements, then his chanting and his other services will go nicely because that's what's strong. But his personal social dealings aren't. So you have to situate one in that environment where that social dealing will be comfortable. Right? That should be the approach. Whether that is or not, that's another thing. But I'm just talking about, it's not a strange thing that such a thing would happen. Just like, let's say, if the temple has some facility for grihasthas, but that would mean someone who's living like a pujari. So they don't need really any more facility than the brahmachari, except that they have a room instead of like this. That'll function. You know, very minimal considerations. But if they require all kinds of facility, then the temple environment won't be able to produce that. So he'll have to adjust himself to a situation that will take care of all those needs. Right? You know, a specific need does a specific thing. Does that make sense? You know, that's the thing. You know, the teapot will boil water to make tea, but it may not be ideal for cooking dal or something. You know, dal you do in a different pot. So it's not a matter of sentiment, it's a matter of what is the appropriate situation. Does that make sense?
Yes. The question was more like, what is the highest principle?
What is the highest principle? The highest principle is to be fully absorbed in body, mind, and words and chanting, in the Lord's service. That's the highest principle. But the point is because of Samkirtana, you have to find a situation in which you can engage your body, mind, and words without disturbing someone else. That's why the Dharma Shastra is there. That's why the Grihastha has his own house, because he wants to eat in his own way. It's like we were discussing the other day. The brahmacharis, you cook one thing, everybody eats the same thing. Like that. But if you go to a house, you know, traditional houses, no one eats the same. Everybody has some little uniqueness that's different. That's their specific idiosyncrasy. So that works in the house environment. It doesn't work in the temple environment. So therefore, that if one requires that, then one has to create another environment for it. It's just the way it works. It's not a matter of sentiment. It's a matter of what is the problem. The problem is not that he's chanting and he's doing everything, you know, that the Guru Maharaj says. That's fine. That's his sadhana. It's really nice. But his social interaction, that's where the problem is. That's a different field. So therefore, that has to be adjusted. But now if they're telling him he can't chant or he can't do a service, that's a problem. But it's that one is relocating the situation in which his social functioning won't disturb someone else. Then that's pretty standard.
What about his dressing?
The dress, that just depends upon how their what is their criterion for the saffron or the white. That I don't know what their criterion is.
Because Prabhupada said in the class, I heard bachelors, one should not remain bachelors.
One should not remain. So one should either move, go into saffron or go into white. But the point is what's the criterion for the change? One would have to look at that. What's their definition of what's white and what's saffron?
Does one can remain brahmachari by living outside of it something?
See, the thing is even though we would like to pursue this line of discussion's not going to actually get anywhere, because you know the situation I don't, and you're asking questions to answer your, you know, understanding or dealing with the situation, but since I don't know the situation, I can't actually get into detail. I can only deal with the principle. Like that. Because the point is the brahmacharya is the state of mind. So living outside, what does that mean, living outside the temple? You know, because the point is that if there are other such brahmacharis, they put them all together in one place, and then they have their ashram like that for them. And so they'll be able to support. So I don't know what's being dealt with. I don't know what's the vision. I don't know what's the situation. So we can't actually enter into detail here. Is that what I'm saying? Like that. The principle, you have to, means you know the situation, take the principle, try to apply it. That's all we can do. Is that okay? Six, committing sin on the strength of the name. If the jiva takes shelter of the pure name, which is Suddha Sattva, or transcendental, and pure at all times, quickly all the anartas, including weakness of heart, will go away. Remember, weakness of heart has the two levels of, the first is that I'm the controller and enjoyer, right? So the weakness is that I think I'm God instead of accepting that I'm the living entity, right? The second is the specific attachments to how to control and how to enjoy by one's conditioning. When one becomes fixed in the holy name, one will no longer think of committing sin. And the effects of past sin will no longer influence one. This is due to purification of the heart. Right? So this is this process, this is the standard. Sin may be analyzed in three stages. A sinful act is the final stage. This is caused by a seed of sin or a desire to sin. That desire or seed originates in ignorance, which is the root cause. All three are considered as causes of the suffering of the living entity. Right. So in other words, there's ignorance, then from ignorance there's the desire to perform the sin, then there's the performance of the sin. Right. So those three stages. It is guaranteed that quickly one will be purified from all sinful influence. However, inevitably, there is a period between sinful life and the pure state. And in this interim period, there may be some relation with past sin. That is, some diminishing trace of sin. However, new sin is not being committed, and the past sin is quickly dissipating. The more one engages in the holy name, the quicker that sinful odor will vanish. Krishna promised Arjuna that he would never let his devotee fall into trouble. Since trouble is caused by sin, Krishna mercifully takes away all sin from the devotee. Only with great trouble is the jnani able to control sin. But without Krishna's shelter, quickly he will fall from his spotless position. Therefore, as scripture concludes, only by taking shelter of the Lord in bhakti is safety guaranteed. Right? So to stay away from sin, as was being discussed before, it's only through the devotional process. Knowledge means sin, the basis of sin is ignorance, but just by knowledge alone, that will not necessarily keep one in the spotless position. So there must be cultivation of knowledge along with the chanting of the holy name. Does that make sense? So the chanting is the primary element. Then, by having proper knowledge, then one can support that. Even if by accident a devotee happens to commit a sin, he does not resort to the purificatory rites of prayaschitta and karmakanda. That sin is temporary, and by chanting it will be washed away, leaving no influence. However, there is another type of sin. If someone intentionally commits a new sin out of lust, thinking there will be no bad effect because of the name's power in destroying sins, that person is not a serious devotee, but is known as a cheater. From his offense against the name, he will reap lamentation, fear, and death. Thus, two types of sinful activities may be distinguished: an unpremeditated sin and a premeditated sin. There is a gross difference between the two according to scripture. Now, here the term premeditated, unpremeditated, that must be addressed, because he's defined the unpremeditated, or let's say, Yeah, the premeditated means he's starting a new line of sin. And he's feeling that there's not going to be a problem from the sin because I'm chanting. Right? So that's premeditated. Because you beforehand think it's all right to sin because I'm chanting. So that's premeditated. Not unpremeditated means that one, by previous habit, the opportunity comes up for the sin and one involves oneself in it. Right? Now the concept was premeditated because he thought, oh, I'm going to do this. So therefore it's premeditated. In this way, everybody can be, you know, burnt at the stake. But that's not the definition. That's our own definition for our own material purposes. But the definition is you feel that there's no problem in sinning because I'm chanting. That's premeditated. So what's premeditated is the fact that the sin can go away because I'm chanting. But if one is not thinking like that, one is just being overwhelmed by one's previous activities. And so if one sticks to the chanting process, you know, and associating with devotees, then with time, that will go away. You know, you can't say, oh no, but for 6 months he was doing this, and so he had planned to go here and go there, so that's premeditated. That's not premeditated. That's technically one fall down. And just what happens in the fall down, one can't get overly absorbed in. That's for the person who, gossip is very important to them. Right? What was that thing before we were saying? We were just reading, they were saying about the different, oh, the fault. That fault where one, remember it said that one is the four faults?
Yes.
But the desire to see everything in relation to something that you can tell to others and everything. It's, in other words, gossip. In other words, that's what we want to get into. You know, in other words, it's a package. Just like, you know, typical. The sadhu is sitting doing his meditation in the forest. He's becoming very powerful. Indra becomes worried. He sends the apsaras. Okay? So, is this typical so far? Every time the sadhu becomes powerful, Indra gets worried, he sends apsaras. Right? He could have sent, you know, big rakshasas, you know, with nice bald heads and a tattoo and, you know, in black t-shirt come up, and they come up to him and say, we think it's good for your health to stop all this meditation. You know, but he doesn't bother with that one. He sends apsaras, right? Does that make sense? Right? So it's always the same. Right? And then the apsara will, you know, sing, dance, something to get his attention. She has to, because if he's in meditation, he's not looking at her. He doesn't look at her, then, you know, problem is not solved. So she has to do something to, you know, generally they don't come up there and, you know, get one of those cans of compressed air with a horn on the top and throw it off, and then yes, says, yo! You know, that's not what they're doing, you know. Or they bring in a ball and a chain like that, swing it over and knock the guy off the cliff. They're not doing that, right? It's always the same. They're always going to sing and dance and something like that. And then they're going to fall down. And what path is that going to follow, right? It's always the same thing, right? So in Bhagavatam, then it will refer to this. You know, it will say he was becoming powerful. Indra got worried, sent this particular apsara. She came and danced, caught his attention. They fell down, you know, they had a kid, and she left. And in 1 to 3 verses, it's done. Right? But in Mahabharata, you know, to get into, she would move like this and dance like that, and he saw this, and he got inspired by that. You understand? Why? Because people want gossip. Yeah, you understand? So the point is you have illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. You know what I'm saying? So what's the big deal? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? He either took it, he snorted it, smoked it, ate it, mainlined it, freebased it, you know, he like that. So do we have to get into anything else? You know, do we have to get down to, yeah, you know, he wanted to use a size 18 needle, but in the shop they only had needles for, you know, injections and eyes, so it was a 24 needle. So instead of, you know, injecting himself in, you know, 7.5 seconds, it took him 34 seconds, you know, so much more demoniac. He spent so much more time, you know, you understand? Absolutely useless. So, that's the point, is that devotees get into the thing of wanting to know, well, what happened? How far did it go? What does it matter? Sin, and that's what it is. And the process to get rid of it is knowledge, association, and the chanting. You know, and probably in the reverse order. Chanting, association, and knowledge, right? That's all. But we'll get into this and that, and we won't come up to improving the situation, putting emphasis on chanting or on knowledge. No, it'll be some other external situation that has nothing to do with chanting, association, or knowledge. You understand? So this is the problem. So the point is we're not actually dealing with the process of chanting the holy name. So we feel it's not the name that's going to purify. So then it takes on the quality. Our dealing with committing sin, this means sin, we're dealing with the fifth offense, interpretation. Name itself can take care, but the unpremeditated means, by past habit, one is involved. Premeditated means one understands that by chanting one will be relieved, therefore there's not a problem in sinning because then I can chant and relieve myself of the sin. Does that make sense? Yes.
At the end of 5, you said that in order to be relieved of offense, one should go before an assembly of Vaishnavas.
Yes.
And reveal his offense at their feet.
Yeah, but that's that specific one. He gives different ones, give different. So this one may or may not be important. See, because something has gone, it's by chanting. We'll see what he says here at the end. Yeah, here, if by fate one commits this offense, one should purify himself by association with pure Vaishnavas. He doesn't say one has to reveal. You understand? That we demand that he reveals is only our need for gossip, that's all. Because Manu says that which is unknown is purified simply by association and chanting. That which is known, then you have to have more, then there's generally expected more of an external. So there's no need to reveal. One just has to understand, I have to be more serious about chanting and associating with devotees and studying the scriptures. That's what it says. So to say, no, you have to reveal it, that's simply the person who stated that, their need for hearing mundanities. And they may say, no, but it's for their own benefit. It's not. Haridas Thakur doesn't mention it. The previous one, because he has a bogus philosophy, that's affecting, that you reveal in front of others. But if there's sin, that if it's not obvious and you catch yourself at this, that these come, then you just are serious about associating with devotees. Does that make sense? In the case of ordinary sin, one can counteract it by prayaschitta. But if one even thinks of committing sin on the strength of the holy name, there's no remedial measure, right? In other words, one could commit sin on the material platform knowing that there is a prayaschitta. And by performing the prayaschitta, you'll be relieved from the sin, not the mentality, but the sin. But with the holy name, then that's not going to work. Like that. Because then you're taking advantage. There's no remedial measure, so serious is the offense. Even endless torture by the servants of Yamaraj cannot deliver him from the offense. And if thinking of committing the offense to the name brings such suffering, how much more will the suffering from actually committing such an act? So just thinking of it. He says, even if one thinks of committing the sin, there's no remedial measure. So unlimited torturing by the servants of Yamaraj. So let alone committing the sin. So the only remedy is association. An example is given. In scripture, one hears that the holy name removes the effects of more sins than one could commit in 10 million lifetimes. In countless places, the scriptures state that by Nama Bas, all five types of sin, even the greatest sin, can be removed. All five types of sin. That means killing of a Brahmin, stealing the gold of a Brahmin, sleeping with the wife of a Brahmin. The Brahmin becoming intoxicated and associating with those who do the other four. Like that. So those are the five greatest sins that the Vedas mention. Right? Somehow or another, those are standard ways of life for the Westerner. Like that. All five types of sin, even the greatest sin, can be removed. A person of a cheating mentality, hearing this information, will, with ill motive, start chanting the holy name. In the same way, a person may give up regular work as difficult and take the cloth of a renunciate, but still associate with women and wealth for sense gratification. Using the position of an advanced renunciate as a means of enjoying as a householder is a great disturbance to the social order and the universe at large. Either as a householder or as a renunciate, there is no impediment to taking the holy name and perfecting one's life, provided one carries out his devotions according to the rules without offense. But to have the idea of committing sin under the shelter of the name is a great offense, which will block the path to bhakti. Right? In other words, hearing about the greatness of the name, then one takes it up, knowing that one can clear all the sins, and he's still committing them. Right, because it says more sins than one commit in 10 million lifetimes. So it's definitely going to take care of this lifetime. Does that make sense? So one is avoiding that. Does that make sense? So in other words, taking that path that will be good for your own material purposes, but claiming that it's spiritual, then that's this offense. One who is at the Namabhasa stage by bad association is always in danger of committing this offense. But one who has Shuddha Nam does not commit this aparad. Those who have the shelter of the pure name always live in association of pure Vaishnavas and are vigilant to avoid offenses. They have a mind determined not to move from thought of Krishna, not even for a moment. But one not in this status should live in fear of offenses, particularly the offense of committing sin on the strength of the name. This person should constantly chant the Lord's name and by the grace of Guru get Sambandha Gyan, which will in turn give him real Krishna Bhakti and real Krishna Nam. Right? So here, chanting constantly, then following the orders of the Guru and the association of the Vaishnavas, then he gets Sambandha Gyan, which will then bring it where he will actually understand the process and be able to take up the pure chanting. If by fate one commits this offense, one should purify himself by association with pure Vaishnavas. Sinful desires are like thieves on the road to bhakti, and the pure Vaishnavas are the protectors of the road. Loudly call out the name of the protector. When the protector comes, the thief flees. Say that name in love and do not fear, for remember that the Lord has said, I am your protector. Seven, giving the name to the unfaithful. Because he has not developed any faith in Krishna or the name.
He encourages to call the name of the Vaishnavas.
Call the name of the Vaishnavas, pure Vaishnavas. Is that a problem?
No. Okay.
Because the point is the pure Vaishnavas, they're chanting the name. By taking shelter of the pure Vaishnavas, you can take shelter of the pure name. Right. Because in these you have to see is that how, because you have the element of something can be applied on so many different levels. So you just have to see what the levels are. So sometimes it comes out nicely in English, these subtleties. Sometimes it gets missed. You know, like the verses on the prayers to Nityananda Prabhu. In the same verse is calling him Nityananda, he's Ananta, he's Mahavishnu, he's Maharnarayan, he's Baladev, it's just one person. They're just all these different moods and manifestations. So the point is the Vaishnavas represent the Lord. The Lord comes as the Vaishnava. So Krishna is the, so he said, the Vaishnavas are the protectors of the Lord, and Krishna says, I am your protector. So that means that potency of the Vaishnavas to protect the road is Krishna's potency. Therefore, one by associating with the Vaishnavas and chanting, one will be protected. Is that okay? Giving the name to the unfaithful. Because he has not developed any faith in Krishna or the name, the materialist cannot even hear the name. To take up the name, one must have qualification. That qualification is faith, and faith alone. Good caste by birth, good family, knowledge, social influence or strength, and educational qualifications are not the cause for qualification to the holy name. Right? All those are piety. Right? If one has that, one is to that degree one has that, that's piety. To that degree one lacks that, that's impiety. Right? But those aren't the qualifications for chanting. So sometimes means we feel that if we have proper social influence and strength, then people will take up the chanting. Or very educated in qualifications, then they'll take up the chanting. You know, does that make sense? But that's not the reason. They'll take it up because of faith. So if you can give them faith, they'll take it up. These other things are only to catch their attention so they'll listen to you. There's a difference between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur dressing in a very contemporary way in a very large gathering of, you know, how you say, gentlemen. So that it catches their attention that he's also, you know, up to date, and so they listen to his philosophy. Well, otherwise they would think, he's just like all those others, they have no knowledge, why we should listen to him, so they won't bother. And actually thinking that it's being dressing nicely that actually is the effect of preaching. There's a difference. Right? No, that means faith in the name is not going to come from anything material. It's only, it creates an environment that will catch the attention of the materialist in a particular way so that they'll be willing to hear about the process and associate. The only qualification is faith, and faith means to have unflinching conviction in the glories and powers of the name. That is the statement of the scriptures. Right? So it's in the name, it's not these other things. So until you've given them faith in the name, the glories of the name and the power of the name, then they don't actually have the qualification to chant. So that's why we wonder why it is we've been going to the yoga studio now for so many months and nobody's taking up the chanting, because we haven't actually given them faith in the name. Right? So that has to be done a little more directly.
Before giving, we need to have first.
We have to have, of course. Right? You can give what you have. So if you have, then you can give. You don't have, you won't give. Or can't give. Yeah. If one does not have faith, a real Vaishnava will not give him instruction on the name. That is the behavior of a Vaishnava. For if the faithless man takes the name, he will simply offend it. For instance, if one casts pearls to the swine, they will simply grind them to dust. Or if one gives fine cloth to a monkey, he will tear it to pieces. If the faithless take the name, they will kill themselves from their offenses, and simultaneously, he who gives the name to the faithless will lose all his devotional credits very quickly. Sometimes a faithless man, being envious, will beg the name from the Vaishnavas, But the Vaishnava should understand that he is a cheater and refuse to give him the name. To take faith in the name, one must give up the cheating mentality and the desire for position and fame. The cheater is thinking, by taking the name, I no longer have to fear committing sinful activities. By becoming a Vaishnava, everyone will pay dandavats to me and I can get all sorts of service from others. Whatever position I lost by my previous activities, I can retrieve by chanting japa. By this process, I can become very happy in this world. This is the cheater's mentality. For qualification to the name, one must give up this attitude. Right? So now that we've seen exactly what they're talking about here in what is the unfaithful, right? Then we can see is that that's not necessarily a common occurrence. It's a rare occurrence, right? That one comes across such a person. But the point is if, even if it does, it says he who gives the name to the faithless will lose all his devotional credits very quickly. And since this is the offenses to the name that block devotion, you know, you only need to do that once to create some problem. Right? So one should know all the different ways that there can be an obstacle. Does that make sense? Right? So some of these you'll see you'll come across more regularly, some of these not so regularly. But the point is that unless one knows, then one won't be able to deal with them properly. If the guru gives the name to a faithless man because of desire for wealth or material possessions, by that offense to the name, the guru will go to hell. Right? In other words, he just increases the followers. Because then there'll be position, there'll be facility, like this, then that won't work. If by misfortune or accident a guru gives a name and instructions to a faithless person, he should have great fear. He should confess in front of a Vaishnava assembly and give up that disciple. Right? So here's something then, again, it's a map assembly. So we should notice that that's not used in every case. Right, but in these ones, then in other words, where the mentality is wrong, then that is means where philosophically you're dealing improperly. Then that may be brought up to the Vaishnavas.
Philosophical forbearance is more difficult to recognize.
Yeah, philosophical is more difficult. So that's something that one comes to the Vaishnava assembly and says that I've been, you know, I misunderstood or this or that. You know, that's where it is. But weakness of heart, that's not something for public discussion. Right? Because it's just like if it's philosophical, people, how much are they going to take it seriously? Right? Means in your general Western society, or even in your, means those who are dealing with Dharma, Artha, and Kama. Right? So I'm throwing it very broad. For them, morality is a big problem, right? A breach in Dharma is very great. But philosophical misunderstanding doesn't really mean anything, right? If you're a moral person following the Vedas, then you're good. You can have any philosophy you want, right? That's how you define a Hindu. So philosophical, and in the West, you know, philosophy, that's, you know, means you hear about it. You know, occasionally it comes up in a discussion every couple of years, like that. But it's if somebody's philosophically off, no one worries about it. If somebody's sitting there, it means we go away and say, you know, Prabhupada can't say all these things. You know, people won't have faith in Krishna consciousness, or this is not proper, or that may have had some meaning, you know, previously in the Vedic age, but it doesn't have any application now. These are all offenses to the name. These are all philosophical misunderstandings. And what will be the reply? You know, we might find the reply to be, oh, well, everybody has their opinion. They should be able to voice their opinion. And we should all be able to work together and like that. That means we don't mind philosophical deviation. We don't mind offense to the holy name. Right? And that's okay. But if there's anything moral goes wrong from sin, oh, that's a big thing and everybody's got to know about it. Right? So therefore, then those things that are like that, that's not what's discussed publicly. Right? We have this idea, no, they should say in the public, they should admit like that. That's not what the Shastra says. it's for another point. It won't work. Right? So when you're dealing with mechanics, then you use mechanics. When you're not dealing with mechanics, you don't use it. Right? Remember, it didn't work out so well for Moses. Right? Like that. God said, hit the stone with your staff. He did it. The water came. The second time, he said, chant the holy name. And he didn't. He hit it with his staff. So that's why Moses didn't go into the promised land. He didn't have faith in the name. You understand? Not that anybody else did, but, you know, he's setting an example here. So the philosophical deviation, that is something, if you say that in the assembly of Vaishnavas, then they can give you proper direction on what is true philosophy and, you know, give that good association. They'll be very kind to you. And the common person, what will they discuss? I mean, what will they discuss? Not yet, they discuss it. But they'll discuss, oh, you know, he thought this, but then they said that, and this is what it's supposed to be. Right? They're not going to discuss, well, he had the philosophy like that, and he then thought it was like this, and then at this time over there, he said, they won't do that. If it's sin, they will. But if it's philosophy, they won't. So that means by mentioning the sin in public means all those who have heard it, which means the whole world within a few minutes. Right? Like that. I've heard of situations where something happened in Mayapur, you know, and someone else in Mayapur heard about it from someone in America before they had heard about it. They were in Mayapur. It happened in Mayapur, and that evening they heard about it from someone in America, and they didn't even know it had happened. Right? That will be heard all over the world. Everyone will talk about it. And by talking about, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that by talking about someone's, you know, fall downs and this and that as discussion, it also is useless as far as devotional service goes. It's not considered, oh, no, but we're just discussing what not to do. No, you're not. You're discussing that taste of discussing nonsense. Right? So, but if you discuss, reveal philosophical misunderstanding in public and are instructed by the Vaishnavas, that conversation will go all over the world as proper, what's the proper Siddhanta. So you understand? So Haridas Thakur makes a distinction here because one will give a positive effect for the person and the assembly of Vaishnavas and the other won't. Right? Because even though the philosophical deviation is worse, unless you know your Vedanta Sutra is the, you know, when your mother read you bedtime stories and it was Vedanta Sutra, then there's a good chance you will never think philosophical deviation has much importance. You know what I'm saying? Right? So unless you're from Bohemia, maybe they'll get worried about it. But other than them, then yes.
When one sannyasi fell down and his details were broadcast, Prabhupada said you shouldn't have done that because that's going to make it difficult to become
that. Yeah. No, we love to do that because we think that, logic works like this, is that someone falls down, we feel that we have the right to broadcast it. Everybody else has the right to know because a devotee's life is public property. Somehow or another, we say self-realization. Otherwise, we would say, you know, combined consciousness, you know, realization or something. We'd use some other more sci-fi kind of term, you know, like that. But we don't. So by revealing it, then it makes it hard for someone who, because if it's philosophical, that will be dropped very easily because there is no value in philosophy. Right? So there is no misgiving. But in sin there is. You know? So because if you're interested in Dharma Artha Kama, it's all based around piety and sin. Nothing else. Right? While Gyan means you're supposed to give up piety and sin. Right? So that's not the discussion. Because the point is that you're worried about morality. They shouldn't. That means they're sinful, but you're also supposed to not be worried about morality. The devotee's automatically moral, but morality is not a prominent element. Does that make sense? So difficulty will come is that we feel that we're empowered or entitled, that would be the term, entitled to speak because they've done something wrong. There's no entitlement anywhere. No Shastra will support it. Right? Prabhupada doesn't support it. It's just not done. But we ourselves, from our own sub-religious concept of ethics, then we say these things. Right? So it can't have any spiritual benefit. You know. It can't have any spiritual benefit. Everybody knows that sin's bad, so if somebody does it, it's bad. So you don't have to broadcast it. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy didn't put salt in the sabji today. So that goes out on the internet. Everybody's got to know. He's a cook. He should have known better. You know, how long has he been cooking? He didn't put salt in the sabji. You know, what is this? This is nonsense. How can he cook for the temple? So do we do that? No. So why should we do this on here? Because we value sex life. That's why. For us, sex is God. So therefore, when something goes wrong in it, therefore the whole world has to know. But we have to understand that that's specifically the mentalities of the Malechas and Yavanas. You know? That's their, you know, they're so absorbed in this. But otherwise, it's not really the focal point of the Vaishnavas. That's there, so what can we do to correct it? And so you do that by it being done, make adjustments in their own life. And as we said, you make the sin public, forever everyone will talk about it. But you make the philosophical thing public, they'll talk about it for a few days and then everyone will forget about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's like, does Lord Chaitanya have to tell anybody that anyone who criticizes Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because before he was a hardcore Mayavadi and now he's taken up the correct, you know, Siddhanta, if anybody criticizes him for that, then, you know, all the reactions of his Mayavad, you know, endeavors will fall on their head. Does Lord Chaitanya ever say that? No, but with Jagai Madhai, if somebody criticized them for the previous sin, he does say that. Why? Because philosophy, everyone will drop in a moment. You know, it's Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. When we think about him, what do we think about? Right? He's the Lord's associate. He's a great scholar. He was a Mayavadi. The Jagai Madhai, when we think about them, they were the sinful, you know, sons of Brahmins who did all this nonsense and offended Lord Nityananda. Then they became devotees. You understand the difference? So that's why Haridas Thakur is making a big difference here. So these modern concepts of how to purify a prayaschitta, then we can see by Haridas Thakur's method, are not supported by Guru, Sadhu, or Shastra. Is that okay?
Yeah. In those two examples you gave, some more about the Charan Jagat Mada, both of them had, you know, they were long term.
They were long term and they were extreme. There was no more, means Jagai Madhai, that I know of, Yamaraj or Chitragupta came to Lord Chaitanya and says, we can't keep track. We had an unlimited pit. And we threw all the things that we've written down their sins on into that pit. We'd still have more stuff that won't fit. You know, every rule in Manu, they broke. You know, I wonder if they sat down and went down through, you know, things like that. Okay, check, got checked. Oh no, we didn't. We missed that. Oh no, we have to do that again. That was boring. Okay. You know, so they, you know, like that. So Lord Chaitanya had to save them because the manager of the universe couldn't deal with it. Right? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, there was no bigger Mayavadi than him in India at the time. He was the biggest scholar. He was the biggest Mayavadi. You know, so the Mayavadis in Banaras, they were big, but not like him. He was the biggest. Remember, he's Brihaspati. You know, right? So you're not going to get bigger than that. Yes.
So actually, it should look like that, since the deviant philosophy is harder to purify.
The
deviant philosophy. So it should look like, it should be like this, that we should forget about the philosophy after a few days, that he was in a wrong mood of philosophy, and we should forget about the sin he did previously immediately. Actually.
Yeah, even quicker. Yeah. But that's why you don't even bother saying it. Since you have to forget about it immediately, why go through the stage you have to know about it and then forget about it? Like that. If by misfortune or accident a guru gives the name and instructions to a faithless person, he should have great fear. In other words, by accident he didn't know, or by misfortune somehow he got sentimentally and distracted, and it seemed to be good, but then immediately figures out that, you know, that there's something wrong here, like that. Then he should have great fear. He should confess in front of a Vaishnava assembly and give up that disciple. The guru does not do this. By that offense, he himself will become devoid of bhakti and will wander in illusion. Right? So we're not talking about the person who gets distracted by sin and falls down. As we see, Prabhupada didn't give them up. Right? Because it's just a matter of time before how it means they were doing all these same sins, and then he got tired of it and became a devotee. And now, having learned so much and been purified, now by going back to those same sinful habits, how long are they going to do it for? Right? The other one was doing it for unlimited lifetimes, and then finally you figured it out. So now that that's been figured out, it's not a matter of too much time before one comes back. You understand? So that's different. But if you find out they're a cheater, they're simply taking up the devotional process to facilitate their material a removal of sin and material benefits by the process of chanting. That's their motive. Their goal is to chant the holy name to remove their sins so that they can enjoy and get that facility because they look like they're chanting. That then is, you know, given up immediately. Lord Chaitanya gave the order to give instruction in the name everywhere, but that means to give it to the faithful men, and by that perfection will be reached. Right? So when we talk to the innocent, right, those who are open to the idea, then we talk to them. Those who are not, you avoid them. Little bit, but I don't think it's used properly. Because I've heard probably use the term is that the sinning on the strength of the holy name is the most abominable. It's not the worst, it's the most abominable. So I would take it that person's not necessarily by that process going to become purified, because he's not taking advantage of the association of devotees, the knowledge, the actual chanting process. He's only making a show to relieve himself. It's just another, for him, it's just another karma kanda activity.
Therefore,
Yes, but the point is he's not taking advantage of the association. Because he's only in the association of devotees because of what benefit he'll get. Just like, let's say, let us say you have, we'll just take an astrological example. You have, when planets are in the same house, then they affect each other, right? And so depending upon their relationship, they will become stronger, you know, or weaker, like this. So now, all planets, when they're in the same house as Sun, all take a subservient position, except Mercury. Mercury becomes very bright. So now, if we look at this socially, that the Mercury represents the Vaishya, right? Now, when you have, let's say you have big dignitary, big power, like let's say you're with the president of the country, and, you know, there's some big program and all these other, somehow or another, celebrities are there. So then other intellectuals in front of the president are very, you know, humble. Other administrators are humble, right? Your entertainers are humble. Your common person is humble. But the businessman is not humble at all. You know, he's not behaving badly, but he's all bright. And when the picture of shaking hands with the president, when they take that, he's got the big grin bigger than the president. Right? Because all the others are with the president, but he's not with the president. He's in an environment that if others see this, his business will get better. You understand? So even though he's in that association, he's not taking advantage of the association. You could say he's taking advantage of the situation, you know, but he's not actually getting benefit from it as far as what the association can offer. So he doesn't look at it that I'm associating with all these great personalities. I could learn something in my personal life, you know, like this president, you know, he started off from humble beginnings, but, you know, he was determined, he studied hard, you know, he did great in his sports, he was a real, team player, you know, then he got involved in the politics, he worked hard for his constituency, his people liked him, he worked, you know, in the Senate or Congress, they liked him also, he was seen as a good thing like that. Now it's natural he becomes the president, so, you know, you can gain something about hard work and cooperation. That's not what he's gaining. He's only gaining that by being seen with the president, now his business will get better. So for him it's only economics. So therefore, the pretender, his chanting and associating and all that is only what it will gain him in facilities for sense gratification. So he's not actually associating. Right? The other offenses, you could say they're associating. But that one there, because they're a cheater, they're not actually associating. But someone, let's say, who commits offenses to the Vaishnavas, by associating with the Vaishnavas, then someone may explain something, he may get the out of understanding, then understand he's been offensive, or he's been, getting distracted by other elements, you know, either in Shastra or in worship, other than directly Krishna. But by the association of devotees, then that will be worked out. But this other person, the association of devotees, by being in that association, especially if it's more advanced, then people think he's advanced, so therefore he'll get more facility. So he's not looking at it. He's it's like the, you know, the water on the lotus. It doesn't stick. It's not, is that like that? So it's different. It's different. That's why it's said to be avoided. Though it's rare, at least at this point in time, because you have, you know, basically your first generation and things like that, and you're coming up and the culture's not so well established. But he's giving it a time when the culture is well established. So therefore, to be a sadhu is considered prestigious. Like that. So that element, then you could worry about it at that point. But at this point, you know, generally, you probably, if you go to most of our communities in the world and say what would be prestigious, they probably wouldn't say being a sadhu and being renounced, you know, and chanting the holy name. If you brought it up, they would say yes, of course. But you know what I'm saying? They would be talking something to do with economics and social standing. Does that make sense? So when being a sadhu has a level, then it's there. You know, it's like that example Prabhupada gives that of that how do you say? I can't remember exact how it opens, but basically the point is that there's the element that by consciousness then you get, you know, the quality of your child. So then the woman thinks that if I have a child from the sadhu, then there'll be great consciousness in the child. So then you know, such woman goes down to the river where the sadhus are bathing and seduces the sadhu to have a child, right? So, and now knowing this, you know, some cheater who wants to associate with women dresses up as a sadhu and hangs out down there so that he will be seduced and like that. So that person, even though he's at the river taking bath with all the other sadhus, he's not actually getting the association of the sadhus. You know what I'm saying? Because that's not his purpose. The other ones, their purpose is to chant and be involved, but there's a weakness somewhere. So then by continuing with that association, it will be relieved.
Will you consider that the real offenders are the Mayavadi because they understand that Krishna is in the name, while the devotee understands that not only Krishna is in the name, but it is associated? In the sense of, let's say, because the analysis of the people who are offending the name.
Yes.
Krishna technically never takes offense.
Yeah.
So the offense takes place because you mentioned before also that Krishna comes as the devotee.
Yes, yes.
So that aspect of precaution is only one of chanting.
Well,
changes.
I would take it here is that, see, there's the technical we've discussed. Mm-hmm. But now if we're looking at it, why is this such a strong offense? Is that the jiva's in the material world, what's his problem? Is that he doesn't have a relationship with the Lord, right? So when he takes up the process, then that's glorious because, you know, that's called the Bhagya Jeev, right? The fortunate living entity. So he's taken it up, so he's glorious because he's now cultivating that relationship through the process of sadhana bhakti, right? So he's chanting regularly, he's associating with devotees, he's, you know, following whatever needs to be followed to keep him in good association, keep him away from that will be distracting. So the dynamism of his relationship with Krishna personally is not necessarily so great, but it's progressive because he's on that path that it will become. So, but now in that offense, then you're reversing that, is that you're creating a relationship with the Lord, but based on the principle that you're going to exploit the Lord for your own material benefit. So that we could say it would be the most, you know, against developing a proper relationship with the Lord. Therefore, it's such an offense, right? So it's like that. It's not mechanically worse than any of the others. Because they're an illusion, you're an illusion, like that. But you're establishing your relationship with Krishna based on what you're materially going to get from him. And this isn't a materialist who's gone to Krishna and has faith in Krishna and prays, you know, for something material. You know, because he's God. This is that you're just using God. It's not a matter of you're just turning to him because, you know, you want stuff, you turn to God. There's the difference in mentality. So is that okay? So such a person will not be delivered. And if a guru finds that by you know, some unfortunate or accident that happens, then that person is to be rejected, like that. You know. But it doesn't mean that that person, if somehow or another by good fortune he understands his offense, and therefore takes up the proper association, the proper chanting, that he can't be delivered, of course. But until that mentality is there, he doesn't have any chance at all, like that. The other ones, it's very grave. But there's still, you know, hope within the process. But there, it's until he completely changes the mentality. It's not going to. Is that okay? Lord Chaitanya gave the order to give instructions in the name everywhere, but that means to give it to the faithful men, and by that perfection will be reached. One can produce faith by loud sankirtana, and when the jiva attains faith, he will seek out a bona fide guru. From the guru, the faithful man will take the holy name and then easily achieve prema. When thieves, prostitutes, and rogues are made to give up the sinful mentality, one can give them instructions on the holy name. In this way, the name can be spread everywhere. So they give up their mentality, but if they come with the mentality, then it's not going to go away. If one does not take these precautions, being guilty of aparad, one will go to hell. If the disciple commits offense, the guru has to suffer in his devotional progress. In this circumstance, both the guru and disciple go to hell. O Lord Chaitanya, being so merciful, you first gave faith to Jagai and Madhai, then you gave them the name. So wonderful was your personality that you created faith in all men. The Vaishnava should try to follow in your footsteps. So here is that when one's preaching, one's giving the faith first, then the name. Just because you're chanting the holy name going down the street doesn't mean you've given it to them. You've exposed it to them. By that, they're purified. Then when the bhakti sukriti increases, that faith will come. Yes?
Seems that to bestow the faith in the names, one has to some extent explain the glories of the name. So how to find that balance?
That you just say is by chanting God's name, then one means God and his name are non-different. So by the association of God's name, you're in God's association, you'll be purified. You know, that's fairly generic. You know, you have it thrown in, you'll be purified of all the sins of the universe, is that you haven't done that stuff yet. You know, because even that sometimes senior men have a problem with. Like that.
And how to balance this approach from that first the sinful man must first give up their mentality?
Yeah, but before getting the name.
Usually, you are giving the name first to sinners.
No. You're giving them faith in the name. And when they have faith, then they're chanting. Right? You're not giving beads and telling them how to chant and do all that if they don't have faith. We're not saying that they're free from sin. We're saying that they have faith. And they're willing to take up the process. That's what we're saying. Yes.
Now, can we say that before giving the faith in the holy name, people, I have met many people who are attracted first before by the association with devotees.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how faith is generated, through association. But they don't know that it's devotional service, so it's a jñāta sukriti. So technically, we this process starts from shraddha, sarusanga, bhajana, like this. But actually, it's sadhusanga that starts the process, but it's unknown. You don't understand what are sadhus, what is the devotional process, but by their association, you're engaged in devotional activities without knowing it, so you become purified. Right? Being purified, then you get the faith, and then you take up the association, understanding their position as sadhus. Before, you didn't understand. Like, you know, guys come in and hang out with Prabhupada and talk with him and this and that. They don't know who he is. Like that. But once they get faith, they don't sit like that anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Like Prabhupada, he comes, sees Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's sitting on a bench. It's not against Shastra to sit on the bench with a saintly person. He sits on the bench. But he doesn't know who he is. And all he's seen as far as sadhus go are the sadhus his father invites to the house for lunch. And four sadhus a day for the last, 22 years, he's not been impressed. Right? So therefore he thinks another sadhu. You know? Because he knows the standard, but he doesn't know. Then he sits and, he starts talking. Then he understands this is a real sadhu. And then all the other disciples come in. They sit on the floor. But, it would, because of the interaction that's going on, it would change the mood. So he sits, because it's not wrong that he's sitting there. Because it's said you can sit on a bench with the spiritual master. Right? A bench, a boat, a rock, a mat. These things you can sit like that. So, like a bed, right? Anything that there's only one place to sit, right? A carriage, like in a car, you can sit on the same level. Sometimes you see, they try to sit between the seats and on the floor because the spiritual master's up. No, you sit on the seat level. That's just, there isn't some other place to sit. Why there? Try the back window, right? Like that. You get in there. It would have that comforting element of the fetal position along with the respect for the guru, in the back window, so. If one does not take these precautions, being guilty of aparad, one will go to hell. If the disciple commits offense, the guru... has to suffer in his devotional progress. In this circumstance, both the guru and disciple go to hell. O Lord Chaitanya, being so merciful, you first gave faith to Jagannamatai, then you gave them the name. So wonderful was your personality that you created faith in all men. The Vaishnavas should try to follow in your footsteps. So you work to create faith. So by association of devotees, they get faith. Having faith, then you give the name. It's not that they can't come and sit in on the kirtan and chant. But technically, you haven't given them the name. Giving them the name is when they want to know the process. How do you involve yourself in the process? So therefore, you chant. Right? Does that make sense? But just coming, taking prasad, doing kirtan, that's developing faith. That's association. Because it's not their process yet. You're doing it. It seems nice. They're doing it. You know what I'm saying? And then after that, you go. It's not that they've taken it up. Does that make sense? Yes.
So is it that the faithless mainly refers to the demoniac people?
Yeah, those who are like that, the cheaters, or those who the atheists, they just don't believe in God, this and that, so many things. So they just don't want to hear about the process, don't want to know about it and all this and that. But the fortunate thing is especially in, your contemporary environment, even someone's an atheist, very rarely are they totally in all aspects of their life, because generally philosophy and lifestyle are two different things. Religion and lifestyle are different. Like in your ancient cultures, they're synonymous. So then you have more of a problem. But here is that the guy's an atheist in one area, but you can talk about something else. And then through something else. And if nothing else, they take prasad. Like that. So like that, you find some other area to purify them through. You don't talk about, like somebody who, like Prabhupada, is someone come to the temple. What was his name? I think Dr. Patel. And he'd always come because he loved to argue all kinds of stuff like that. And, Prabhupada deal with those things that he could handle. So you have somebody, just like you must have friends. And there's certain topics you just don't discuss. Because if you do, they have issues with that. So you just don't discuss those things. But it doesn't mean you can't develop on other sides. So in the same way, as just because you brought that up and they're not going to take that, you don't insist that, no, that's the only way. You take something else. Like that. And so if there's nothing that you can address, then you don't bother associating. Right. You never had that, you're out there and then some guy comes up, you start preaching to him, and then another devotee comes along and says, oh, don't waste your time with him. He's just there to argue. Yeah, so then that's those are the guys you avoid. Right. 8. Considering the name is equal to material piety. Haridas said, O Lord, please note that the holy name is not to be equated with the pious activities mentioned in the Vedas. One should know the identity of the name. Krishna is the spiritual son, perfect, conscious, and inconceivably wonderful. Thus all the Lord's diverse forms can be similarly fully spiritual, including his name, Tam and Leela. Unlike material objects and names, the Lord's principal names are non-different from the Lord. When the devotee chants the name, that name is coming directly from the spiritual level, from Goloka to the Atma, from the Atma to the body, where it dances on the devotee's tongue, in his mind, etc. If one takes the name with this conception, then it is the real name of the Lord with full power. But to take the name as a material object leads to sorrow. Right, so he's also made point of the principal names, that these are directly the Lord. Because otherwise, just as you have a portion of a portion of a portion, you know, a preliminary portion, like Paramatma is a portion of a portion of Krishna. Right? But the principal names, those are directly Krishna. Does that make sense? We say Paramatma, we're dealing with a portion of it, an expansion. We say Nanda Nandana, you're dealing directly with Krishna and Braj. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
What is the definition of Atma in religion? Sometimes Atma is used and sometimes Jiva is used.
Atma, Jiva. Atma refers to the body, the mind, the intelligence, and the consciousness. So it refers to all that. So in your dealing with Atma, then it can mean from the situation of the Atma, you know, the consciousness of the Atma or like that. In other words, it's going to the name goes directly from the Lord to the Atma. Then you'll see the manifestation through the body. Right? So here, since they mention from the Atma to the body, you know, then they're not meaning, Atma's not meaning body here. So this means the devotee themselves. But otherwise, it's the same. You can say Atma, you can say Jiva. The Jiva you generally are using when you're talking about the specifics of the... When you're dealing with Tattva, you much of the time use Jiva. Because then you're establishing the particular potency or the particular nature that they have. While Atma, then you're dealing more with just the living entity. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Same, but it's... Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here. Continue on Monday. Right, no one has any distractions. It's Bakri Eid on Monday, so no one has any other things to do or something. No?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanam.